Welcome to the podcast ABCs of Parenting Adult Children. Please join us as we discuss parenting adult children and the unique struggles that it comes along with.
Be your host. Now, I know it's been almost 30 days since I have produced a podcast episode, and that's not what I really had intended for this podcast, but when you work two jobs and work 50 or 60 hours a week, it's difficult to stay on track with this. So I know that podcasting experts say that you're supposed to stay consistent with your podcast episodes, and so that you don't lose followers and keep your engagement up. And so I know it's been 30 days, and so for that, I don't know what to say other than I'm sorry. I'll try to do better, right? That's all we can do. Progress, not perfection. So, today's episode 19, we're going to talk about the empty nest syndrome. So, before I delve into that topic, Katie and I have been empty nesters for about, 5 or 6 years, something like that, something close to that. It's been less than 10 years, more than 4, right? She's a lot better with the timelines than I am. And we have currently we have a 31-year-old daughter named Christina. And we have a 28-year-old son, Justin Matthew, who is, did I already say 28? Yep. And I have a 38-year-old son named Jeremy. Jeremy is up in Detroit, Michigan somewhere. We've kind of lost touch with him. He's off on his own tangent, doing his own thing. And my daughter is living downtown Charleston, renting a room and working at a restaurant. She stayed with us recently for about, 30 days or so. Stayed in our spare bedroom. She came here from Oregon, and she kind of traveled through several states, obviously, driving and stopping and visiting with friends along the way. And she landed here, and we gave her my wife moved stuff out of her office, moved one of the desks out into her master bedroom, and my daughter stayed in that spare bedroom and kind of camped out with her dog. And so anyway, she found a job at a restaurant downtown, and she found a room to rent downtown for $400 a month. Come to find out, rooms are going for around $2,000 a month, if you can imagine that, in downtown Charleston. And my 28-year-old son, Justin, who is now an attorney, he told me that rooms for rent downtown Charleston are going for right around $2,000, if you can imagine that. $2,000 a month to rent a room and a house. That's more than my mortgage and lot rent where we're staying. So anyway, our children have moved out, or I should say have long since moved out, and begun their journey into adulthood. And as we all know, with today's economy, it's very difficult for our children to establish themselves, you know, rent a house or rent an apartment, much less buy, you know. And with rentals, you have to, you know, you have to come up with the rent deposit, the pet deposit, first month and last month rent, pass a credit screening, prove that you have the income to afford the housing, and all that. Provide references, blah, blah, blah. So even if you rent from an individual owner, the owners typically use property management companies that go that handle all the overhead. They handle all the reference checks and background checks and references, and they check your rental history, make sure that you haven't skipped out on any rent or broken any leases, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So it's not easy. It's a very laborious process, and probably kind of daunting for our newly adult children to launch themselves into. So anyway, I said all of that to say that, you know, sometimes our kids experience a boomerang effect and wind up back at the house. They wind up having to regroup, reorganize, reprioritize, and save up money and, you know, do whatever is necessary so they can get back out on their own. I think that's a natural thing for that to happen, especially in this economy. Now, I know that there are cultures, different cultures, even here in America, there are cultures that families really stick together. Moms, dads, grandparents, uncles, aunts, children, and parents are there for their kids. And there's nothing wrong with that. Trust me. I don't think there's anything wrong with that at all. And if the culture that you're in has a long history of families living together and doing the communal thing so that everybody can have a roof over their head and food to eat, a place to survive, not live on the streets, then more power to you, more power to them. I think that's a great thing. I don't think there's anything wrong with that at all. However, I also know that there are other cultures in America. I can't speak to outside of the USA because I've never lived outside of the USA, but I know that there are other cultures within America that encourage children to leave the nest, right? We spend a lot of time, energy, money, blood, sweat, and tears, sleepless nights, days and nights in an emergency room, in the hospitals, all sorts of things. Parenting is not for the faint of heart. Parenting is probably one of the biggest adventures that anybody will endeavor. Parenting is a lot of responsibility. And if you think about it, we are the only species on this planet that spends 18 years raising our children. If you think about the animal kingdom, that doesn't happen. I mean, they give birth to their children, take care of them for however long. Birds kick their young out of the nest and go, "Hope you can fly." And I guess the baby birds learn how to fly between the nest and the ground, right? That or they bounce and they figure it out. There are other animals in the wild kingdom. You know, you watch National Geographics and other wildlife documentaries where they show you know, video documentaries about how caribou and camels and water buffalo and gorillas and giraffes and all different manner of mammals who have different gestation periods of, you know, how long they carry the baby to birth, and some of them are super long, some of them are short. I don't know, but you get the point. Human beings spend 18 years raising their children and protecting them and providing for them, providing a roof over their head, clothing, school books, education, religious upbringing, family culture training. We pass along our morals, our morality to them, our moral compass, our political leanings, our political beliefs, all sorts of things that parents do for our children, right? And we do it because we want our children to be well-rounded, well-educated, good moral beings when we send them out into society. So, anyhow, one of the things that we've not covered in ABC's Parenting Adult Children podcast is the empty nest syndrome, right? So, Katie and I have been empty nesters for a while, as I've already said. And I used Copilot from Microsoft, which is their ChatGPT or their AI engine that they have come out with. And I like it okay, I guess. I really don't like using 100% of the information I get from ChatGPT, but it helps me to supplement my knowledge, right? I have, as a parent, you know, I have experience as a parent, and I have beliefs as a parent, and I know the path that my wife and I took with regards to raising our children. And I guess you could say that we had a small measure of success, maybe. But anyhow, I like to use AI to help supplement my knowledge and to bring you, the listening audience, information that I might not have, right? And so please allow me to do that for you. It's a value-added service, I guess you could say. So I asked ChatGPT to talk to me about the empty nest syndrome and how parents can work through that, right? One day you're changing diapers, and the next day you've got juveniles or juvenile delinquents or teenagers living under your roof that think that you're the biggest idiot on the planet, that you're out of touch, and that you don't know what you're talking about. And but yet they still need a roof over their head, and they still want free internet access and food, and they want you to buy them new school clothes and provide all of the physical things that they need to get along in life, right, and continue on their journey to adulthood. And then one day they go to their junior or senior prom in high school, and then they're graduating, and some of the kids are gonna go to some sort of trade school, or maybe even apply to some colleges, get accepted, go off to college for 4 years. Some of the kids are gonna stay home, some of them are not. Some of them will live in dorms, some of them will live outside of the college in an apartment, which you may or may not have to pay for outright, or you may have to help supplement that expense so they can go to college, right? Sometimes kids get student loans that they wind up having to pay back after college. Sometimes moms and dads are vested enough or financially able to pay for the college so the kids don't have to pay for it. That was not my experience when I grew up. When I went to college, I had to get student loans, which I'm still paying back today, right? And so whichever way it goes, you know, our children have to deal with the hand that they're dealt to them just like we did, right? So anyway, one day we're empty nesters, right? And I'm on Very Well Family. It's www.verywellfamily.com. It's all together. Verywellfamily.com. So they have an article that I'm going to read to you. It says, how to refeather your empty nest. And it's by Sherry Gordon. And it was written on May 30th of 2021. So it's not real dated, but it's about 4 years old. And I think it's adequate for the topic of today about being empty nesters. It says that when it comes to parenting, it's not uncommon for a large part of a person's identity to be wrapped up in that role. In fact, many parents would describe parenting as the most important, challenging, time-consuming, and meaningful thing they will ever do. But it also goes by so quickly, and that is so true. One day you're changing diapers, and the next you're watching your senior graduate from high school. For 18 years or more, your life has revolved around carpools, homework, and extracurricular activities. And then, all of a sudden, the day-to-day aspects of that role change dramatically when you drop your teen off at college. Not surprisingly, many parents experience a profound sense of loss and uncertainty when their last or their only child leaves the nest. Even though the ultimate goal of parenting is to raise healthy, independent young adults, this transition is still challenging and sometimes even heartbreaking, leaving many parents struggling with empty nest syndrome. For this reason, parents need to prepare for this inevitable transition by looking for ways to add meaning to their lives. Especially if much of their identity was wrapped up in parenting their kids. If you're struggling with this new season in your life, there are some ways you can address empty nest syndrome and breathe new life into your home. Now I'm going to take a break from reading this article and tell you that one of the outcomes of being an empty nester has been that the parents look at one another and go, who in the hell are you? It's like they don't even know who their partner is anymore. The love of their life, the person that they fell in love with, you know, probably 20 or 30 years ago. They've been so focused on parenting their children that they lost the romantic and intimate connection with their spouse, with their loved one. And sometimes that's an event that some couples, husbands and wives, don't know how to get past. And sometimes it winds up in divorce. Sometimes parents look around and go, well, we've done our job, our kids are gone, we don't know who each other are, we don't know who we are as individuals, and I don't know who you are. So unfortunately, sometimes couples separate and wind up going their own ways and start over. And that's not a decision that my wife and I made. Katie and I are still happily married. In May of this year, it'll be 34 years. And sure, yes, there have been things in our marriage and in our family life that has put a strain on our marriage. You know, we lost a daughter to cancer at 10 years of age. We went through 14 months of multiple trips and surgeries and therapy at MUSC's Children's Hospital in downtown Charleston. And that and several other things. That was probably the most dramatic, most shattering event in our family life that came very close to tearing us apart. But fortunately, we had a very strong relationship, and our faith in God and our church family and friends were very instrumental in helping us get through that struggle, that event. So anyway, hopefully if you're an empty nester, I guess my message to you is please realize that you may look at your partner and go, your wife or your husband, and go, I don't even know who you are anymore. Why are we married? Do you still love me? Do I still love you? Do we have anything that we're interested in, that we're interested in together? What are our commonalities? What binds us together, right? There's all these questions that are going to go through your head. So just be aware that that's very natural. So recognize parenting is still needed. Perhaps the biggest thing that parents struggle with is believing that their job is done or that they are no longer needed in their child's life. This is a far cry from the truth, though. Even when your kids are out of the house, they still need you. Whether they think so or not, I'm ad-libbing that one, right? Sometimes our children don't think they need us, beyond financial help, right? And if they are still in college, they will likely be home from time to time. So, rather than assuming your role is complete, recognize that you'll still have a lot of parenting left to do. While it may look more like mentoring than parenting, it's still important. Stay connected with your young adult and look for ways to support them in their adventures. Let's go back to more like mentoring than parenting. Our young adults are adults, right? They're no longer children. And so our relationship with our young adults is that we're the parents, they're still the children, but they're adult children, which means that they're adults. And so our role as parents has changed from being a parent to a mentor. We no longer control the daily activities that they have. We no longer control their coming and going. They don't depend on us for their daily activities. They don't depend on us for getting them from point A to point B. You know, hopefully they're providing for their own way. They're providing, standing on their own 2 feet and have figured out how to find a place to live and find their own food and be able to pay rent or a mortgage and go to school and develop new friendships and all that. So we're more like mentors. We're there to mentor them, and we're there to listen to their stories without judgment and to provide them with a sounding board that they can talk. Hopefully, we have a good enough relationship with our children that they feel comfortable talking to us about what's going on in their lives. Anyway, allow yourself to cry. Wanting to cry when your children leave the nest is a normal reaction. Rather than deny your feelings or try to keep it bottled up, it's important to honor your feelings. Allow yourself to feel sad and grieve over the changes that are taking place. This experience is normal, but won't last long as you adjust to your new role. Also, be sure to go easy on yourself. You have never been in this stage of parenting before, so it's normal to feel empty and uncertain. The key is to acknowledge those feelings and allow yourself to experience them without remaining there indefinitely. Eventually, the sadness will go away as you adjust to your new reality. So, part of separating from your children, part of not being a parent anymore but being a mentor, it's sort of like going through the grieving process, right? You lose a loved one, you know, like we lost our daughter to cancer. So you have to go through a period of grieving. And it's sort of the same way with being an empty nester. Luckily, the separation is not permanent. Luckily, if you have a decent relationship with your child, they'll come home during spring break and during holidays and stuff like that. So it's kind of a temporary separation. Thank God, right? But it's all right to feel those emotions. And I, you know, we have a Facebook support group with over 1,000 members, and probably only about 10 or 15% of those members are active, actively reading and responding to messages. And I've seen an untold number of messages from moms who are grieving the close-knit relationship they used to have with their children. They feel like as if they no longer have that relationship. They don't feel that close bond anymore, that the bond that mothers have with their children. And the bonds that moms have with their children versus what dads have is different. I think a mother's love is nurturing, loving, compassionate, all of the above, right? Moms provide things to the children that dads can't naturally provide sometimes. Now, dads, that's not to say that you can't demonstrate love for your children, but you can't demonstrate love to your children. You can't show them that you love them and spend time with them and be sympathetic or empathetic to times in their life that they're going through, that they're struggling through as they learn how to become adult children, right? I just think moms and mothers are probably better equipped to provide that love and empathy and sympathy and that motherly love that dads have no clue how to provide, right? There's nothing wrong with that. That's not a diss on dads. So that's allow yourself to cry and to grieve that period of separation that you feel when your child goes off to college, right? Rekindle things with your partner, right? It's not uncommon for your marriage to get pushed to the back burner when you're in the thick of raising kids. It's not uncommon for your marriage to get pushed to the back burner when you're in the thick of raising kids. Now that your nest is empty, it's the perfect time to focus on your relationship again. While it may take a bit of an adjustment to be alone together for such large chunks of time, it will be great for you both in the long run. Set aside time to do things together and include date nights into your plans. Well, let me tell you that I have heard, I know of people that are parents that have children, had children. They had a date night with their spouse once a week. They hired a babysitter or had a family member come over and watch the kids. And they went out to dinner, went to a movie, watched a play, whatever it is that mom and dad wanted to do so that they could rekindle their relationship or keep the fires going, right? To rekindle the intimacy between the two, to focus on one another and love one another, and love the, you know, revisit those things that attracted you to each other to begin with, right? So date nights are very important. Set aside time to do things together and include date nights into your plans. That's very important. Unfortunately, some marriages may become stagnant without the kids there to hold you together. In fact, about 25% of divorces in the U.S. occur when couples reach the kids to college stage in their marriage. If you find yourself in this situation, reach out to a professional who can help you process your feelings and address your conflicts. With time and effort, you can rekindle your romance and deepen your connection. There are family counselors out there. There are therapists, couple therapists. I don't know what they're called. Psychologists, psychiatrists, family counselors. Your church, if you go to church, they may have family counselors on staff or counselors on staff or therapists that can... you can schedule time with and separately or together and talk about stuff, right? Sometimes it helps to talk through things. There's no shame in doing that. Pursue your interests. Parenting is time consuming, so it's highly likely that you neglected your interests and hobbies in order to focus on your family. But after years of putting everyone else's need above your own, you finally have time to focus on the things you enjoy. Embrace this opportunity. If you aren't sure what your interests are, take this time to explore new things. Start by creating a dream list of things you've always wanted to do or try, but couldn't because of other commitments in your life. You may find that you want to take a cooking class, learn to paint using watercolors, or go back to school. The options are endless, so get creative, right? So, I call those hobbies. I still work two jobs, right? About 51 hours a week, just so we can make ends meet. Isn't that fun? But we gotta do what we gotta do. So, as empty nesters, I still, even though I work 51 hours a week, I still have some me time. And what do I like to do? What have I learned how to do? What hobbies do I have? I like to write. I write on Medium and I write on Substack. I've been on both of those. Well, I've been on Medium for, 8 to 10 years. And I've written several hundred articles, and I have people that follow me, and I have authors that I have favorited, and I like to read what they have to say, and some of them are serious, some of the stories are funny. You can comment, you know, for, $5 a month. You can be a paid member on Medium, and you can read and write to your heart's content. And I like to write about things that I'm passionate about. The Second Amendment, gun rights, liberty, parenting, obviously. Parenting adult children. I've gotten into photography. I'm relearning how to take photos with a Canon EOS R100 mirrorless camera. And I'm slowly but surely accumulating the equipment and the lenses, which are not cheap, I must say. So I'm getting into photography again, and the main reason I'm doing the photography thing is because I want to have my own images to use in my Medium articles. I also write on Substack, which is a different social media portal. Some people choose one or the other. I'm on both for now. I'll probably stay on both for whatever reasons. And so I like to go bowling. I like photography. I love to read. I read Baldacci is one of my favorite authors. Clancy is one of my favorite authors. I have several authors. If you follow me on Goodreads, you'll see the different authors that I like to read. And so I like to read. I like to read. I like to write photography. I like to go bowling. My average right now in the winter league I'm on is about a pitiful 128. So I'm a handicap bowler, which means that I get 78 pins added on to whatever my game is. At the end of the game, they tack on 78 pins, which gives me my final score for that game. And it's a lot of fun, right? So I have interests. I have hobbies that I do that I find pleasurable, that I get meaning out. It adds meaning to my life. It adds purpose to my life, right? So if you're an empty nester and you've got all this extra time on your hands, learn how to garden. Learn how to, woodwork. You know, what do guys like to do? Guys, I can talk to dads because I am a dad, and, you know, most of us have man caves. I live in a mobile home, so I don't have a garage that I can turn into a man cave, but I have my office that I do podcasting in, right? And so this is my man cave, per se. Guys, what do you like to do? You like to go bowling? You like going bowling and drinking beer? I don't know. You like going out into nature? Like fishing, hunting? A lot of guys like to go hunting. I like to go fishing. I would imagine lots of man caves in these United States of America are full of deer heads and bass and all sorts of things, right? What about you, moms? What do moms like to do in their spare time? What kind of hobbies would you like to get involved in? These are things that you have to think about. Maybe these are things that you've always wanted to do, right? You're going through the parenting role, and you're spending all this time carting your boys and girls around to volleyball and basketball and football games and soccer. And, you know, I know that you probably thought about other things you might enjoy more, right? So anyway, pursue your interests. This is all part of self-care too, right? It's important that we take care of ourselves and one another, right? All right, reconnect with friends. Parenting leaves little time for spending time in social settings, but now that your children have left the nest, you will have more time for getting coffee, having lunch, and even grabbing dinner with your friends. Make an effort to get some things on the calendar. Doing so will give you something to look forward to. And since we live in 2024, social media is a perfect tool to use with reaching out to other people and with reconnecting to people your age group. Like here in Charleston, we're part of the Charleston, South Carolina Friends group. And I'm on that group primarily so I can stay in touch with the guy that hosts poker games once every 3 months. And I go to Somerville and go play poker for 6 or 7 hours. I have a blast doing it too. Most of the people in that group on Facebook are, you know, in their 30s and 40s. And I'm in my 60s, so I'm a little bit older than the majority of that crowd, and that's fine. And there's also a Somerville over 50 group that we're part of. And we've been to a couple of their meetups, and they like to go to karaoke night and do all sorts of things. As a matter of fact, I think that group booked a cruise not too long ago and went on a cruise. That could be a lot of fun. If you've ever been on a cruise or you haven't been on a cruise, maybe that would be an opportunity for you to do that. You should also make an effort to reach out to friends on a regular basis. Social media seems like that's all we know how to do, is get on Facebook and follow people and stay connected that way, right? Text to check in or give them a call, especially if they're entering the same life stage that you are. It helps to talk to someone experiencing the same things. Together, you can support one another as well as share tips on what works and what doesn't. Plus, research suggests that social connections have a positive impact on your health. In addition to reducing harmful stress levels, connecting with friends can trigger the release of stress, reducing hormones. So I'm a baby boomer, right? I was born in the 60s. I was born in 61, to be specific. And I wasn't raised around computers or the internet. Social media wasn't a thing back when I graduated in 1980 from high school. I went to Quinlan Independent School District, Ford High School, from 1976 to 1980. Right? And 1980 was when the personal computer came out. And I didn't get involved in my IT career until 1992, right? And I've been involved in that career ever since then. I've been in IT for 28 years. And so I'm, even as a baby boomer, I'm probably a little more in tune with technology just because it's my field of expertise, right? A lot of baby boomers, I would say, they're definitely not as in tune with technology as I am, but I think over the years that people have adopted Facebook, and you know, we started out with AOL and Prodigy and MySpace and CompuServe, and you know, I don't know when Facebook took over, but this Jewish kid created Facebook for college students, and then before you know it, the whole world jumped in, right? And there's good aspects to social media, and there's bad aspects. And so I guess what I'm saying is that as a baby boomer, I would probably be more inclined, if you're a close friend of mine, somebody that I know, I'm going to be more inclined to pick up the telephone and call you. Versus leaving you a message on Facebook. Facebook Messenger, right? So you have to figure out how you want to communicate. If you're into social media and that's the best way for you to connect to your friends and family, so be it. Do it, and do it on a regular basis, right? Don't turn within yourself. Don't become a hermit. Don't clam up. Reach out to your friends and family. Let them know what you're going through. Plan a trip. Sometimes what you need to cope with the changes in your life is a change of scenery. Whether you plan a vacation or a day trip to a nearby community, getting out and doing something different has a way of making people feel lighter and more full of hope. In fact, some psychologists indicate that traveling somewhere new has a number of mental health benefits. One survey of nearly 500 adults in the U.S. found that travel enhanced energy, focus, attention, and even empathy. Meanwhile, other research suggests that traveling, especially experiencing foreign cultures, facilitates creativity. Reach out for help. It's not uncommon for people to feel stressed, anxious, or even depressed when their kids move out. If you're feeling a sense of loss, you're not alone. Allow yourself to grieve and feel sad. Many people also experience other transitions around the same time their kids move out, like retirement, menopause, or an elderly parent that now needs care. So these changes can add to your stress and anxiety levels. Remember, when your long-held roles change, it is bound to require some adjustment. If you're struggling to adjust, feel like crying all the time, or just can't shake feeling down, you may want to contact a mental health professional who can help you process your feelings and offer support. With some patience and self-care, you can embrace your empty nest with enthusiasm and hope. Now here's a word of encouragement from Very Well, right? www.verywellfamily.com. That's where I'm at. Having an empty nest catches most parents by surprise, even though they know it's coming. To most, it seems like one minute you're worried about naps and picking preschools, and the next you're dropping your child off at college and preparing yourself to say goodbye. If you find yourself in this situation, take a deep breath and relax. While this new season in your life will take some getting used to, it can also be a time of great growth and exploration. Sure, you will have days when all you feel like doing is crying. But as the days go by, soon you will be relishing the fact that you can get to do some things you didn't have time for in the past. What's more, you will still be parenting your kids, just in a much different way. So, I think this is all good stuff, right? If you're a empty nester like my wife and I, I would imagine that most of this resonates with you. And that's my desire, is that I provide you content that's relevant to the situation that you're going through. And so if you're not an empty nester, let's just say your kids are still living at home and you've got teenagers or whatever, just understand that that day is coming, right? It's not going to last forever. Driving your kids around to football and soccer games, basketball, what have you, it's not going to last forever. At some point, you're going to transition from being a parent to a mentor. And your kids are going to go off to college, trade school, fall in love, get married, I don't know, have kids of their own. One size does not fit all, excuse me. So everybody has a path to take, and they take it for better or for worse, and all we can do is be there for them. And so I hope that you found this episode on being an empty nester encouraging. I hope that it was uplifting. I hope that it was informative. And without further ado, I would say thank you for listening to today's episode. Let's try that again. Thank you for listening to today's episode. You can listen to this podcast on Spotify, Amazon Radio, iHeartRadio, Apple, and Public Radio. That's Spotify, Amazon Music, iHeartRadio, Apple, and Public Radio. You may contact us at jamescmoffitt@outlook.com. That's James C. Moffitt, M-O-F-F-I-T-T, at outlook.com. Please share our podcast with your friends, family, and coworkers, and have a blessed day.
Please tune in next week for another episode of our podcast on parenting adult children.